7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Begin transmission.
Smells delicious. Diddly bop bop ging ging lugans. Check, check. Yeah, okay, we're good. Ooh, who's that behind me? Honks. And it's time. What time is it? It's 19:30 UTC. That means it's time to begin another extraordinarily exciting episode of The Dubious Ghouls Committee. Yeah, welcome to the Dubious Ghouls Committee. My name is Tobe. I'm the chairman of this committee. And I'm outdoors walking around in the forest today because I can. It's another strangely warm day. It's 10 degrees. 10 degrees. It's overcast. It's very dark. And it's very misty. There's a lot of fog. There's a fog warning, apparently. But I don't hear any fog horns because I'm not in charge of fog warnings. Clowns. You know who we should get to be in charge of the fog warnings? It's Tobe. He's got all those loud things that he can use to sound warnings, regardless. They didn't choose me. That's fine. And so today I'm outside. I'm back at Tranquility Park. I was thinking about going any number of other places, including but not limited to Harrenhaven, the other side of Tranquility Park. And maybe Somerset Park, but I said, no, I'm going to go to Harrenhaven. So I drove to Harrenhaven. Oh, and I saw a woman walking her dog. A young woman was walking her dog, and she had fantastic hair. I loved her hair. I was like, my God, how do you get hair like that? It was the kind of hair that I would have if I was in Zig Zig Sputnik. Regardless, so I drove to Harrenhaven, and there was a boatload of people there. A boatload. They even had the boat parked in the damn parking lot. And so I just drove on by, and I started driving over in this direction. And I was looking at the other side of Tranquility. You know, I was looking, you know, towards the heronry. And, yeah, no, there's people there, too. I'm like, well, that is weird. And I look across the street, and there's nobody here. So here we are, where nobody is, except me. Another nobody. But there's a bicycle reflector here in the dirt. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it there. Because I don't need any more of those damn bicycle reflectors. I already got 10 million of them. So yeah, I'm walking around outside today, wondering if we can find anything to look at. I'm walking by the scary tree. I don't see any dudes. We gotta look down into the creek right up here, see if there's anything going on. Not find anything. I'm hearing loud noises way over there, though. Not animal noises, human noises. But yeah, I'm looking around. I see nothing. There's some tracks down in the mud, though. Where are the dudes? Let's find some. All right. Well, So, I thought of another scene from my movie. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Tobe, what movie is this? What are you talking about? Well, I'm thinking about, you know, my biopic. The completely and utterly true biographical film about my life and everything in it. And so I had an idea for a scene, and it's going to be one of those scenes. And yes, you've seen this scene in movies before. I think that the whole point of my movie is that it's going to just be made of very common tropes. Tropes that everybody knows, because I'm just a regular, ordinary, common guy. Ugh, this ground is mushy here. Now my feet are getting wet. How is this possible? Unknown. But yeah, okay, the scene goes like this. It's before I even make an appearance in the film. Okay, right? And, you know... Wait, what was that sound? I think I heard a bird. He's way over there, though. Let's walk towards bird. Squirrel. So, the scene starts. There's a squirrel running over there. He's making a hell of a lot of noise. The scene starts. It opens up in a boardroom or a conference room. And it's very government-y. And all the people in the conference room are all suit-wearing, bureaucrat and star-chambering clowns, right? And there's some big emergency on. You can tell that there's a big emergency because the music is all very, you know, dun 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 dun. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen movies. And so all the government clowns, you know, there's probably a dozen of them. And there's a lot of uniforms, a lot of high-ranking generals, maybe some admirals, and whatever the Air Force has. And they're grasping at straws. Whatever disaster has befallen them, there seems to be no solution. Everyone's very desperate. Everyone is at wit's end. And then somebody says, "We have to get him." And everybody says, "No, we can't. We have no choice." "But we don't even know where he is." "Oh, but we do," says, you know, the head of the super secret information society. Bad guys, but are also the good guys. You can't tell the difference because it's reality. "The last time we had him, we injected him with tracking devices, multiple tracking devices. So even if he loses more organs or limbs, we can still track him." And so they whip out a laptop. Or wait, I guess they don't have to. It's the government. They can just, you know, push the remote control and the wall turns into a giant video screen, right? "Here's the latest satellite data." So they tap into some official government orbital mind control laser satellite type crap, right? And they start scanning the Earth. And they say, "Oh, we got a hit." And the computer goes, dee, 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 dee. And there's a little red reticle on the screen that zooms in. It zooms into the continental United States, somewhere down in the Southwest. "We got him. We've got a hit on him. He's in..." Wait, no. "It's his pancreas. His pancreas is in Tucson, Arizona. Damn." And so they keep scanning. And then eventually, after a couple more false hits, they get a positive lock. "Chief, I got him. I found him. Zoom in. Enhance." And we're looking at a, you know, very, 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 very high altitude satellite photo, right? That continues to zoom in. And we see that it's zooming in somewhere like in Fushan, China. And it keeps zooming in. And there's beeping noises and computer sounds, the sounds of technology and visual effects as they zoom in onto a tea plantation on the side of a mountain in China. And they keep zooming in. They zoom in on, you can see, you know, the individual rows of tea plants now. And they keep zooming in. And then there's a guy laying there, passed out, between a couple of rows of tea plants. And you hear a female voice says, "We got him." So as I'm laying there between the tea plants, the whole, you know, shift of focus sort of changes to my POV, or at least my second person POV. Camera's looking down at me. I'm unconscious on a tea plantation when suddenly there's helicopter noises. Chop, 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 chop. Giant military helicopter lands. No, can't land. It's the side of a mountain, so they got to, you know, fast rope out. You know, four or five guys throw the ropes out of the side of the helicopter, and they go abseiling down the ropes. They start shaking me awake. "Tobe." "What? What? What? Tobe, what?" "Come with us. The world needs you." Oh, God damn it, not again. So I get bundled into the helicopter and we have to go back to, you know, World Spy Headquarters or whatever the hell it is. Nobody even knows. Oh, no, no, even better. That's when the credits start. That's when the opening... That's when the opening credits roll. This helicopter's giving me a headache, and I'm just complaining the whole time. This helicopter's making my sinuses run. Call me Snake. You know, one of those. Then I'd probably get injected with another tracking device. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, with a movie opening like that, you can go anywhere. You can go anywhere with that. That's just good storytelling. Well, you know, I'm still walking around. I haven't seen anything. Only thing that's happening is that there's one of the park guys is, I don't know, 80 yards to my left, right? My right? Oh, and he was dumping something out of the truck, making noise. So we heard lots of clangs. Now he's driving away in the other direction. As I come upon the road, and as I loop around on the road here, I'm looking down into the creek, and there's a couple of tags down in there in that little culvert. Brand new tags. There's three. One of them is Bits. One of them is a bay. It's done with in pink ink. Probably, I could hazard a guess, but it would only be a guess. So we're going to loop around the top of the creek here. And we've been finding interesting stuff back here lately. Last couple of times we've been back here, well, we've seen a deer, turkey, that weird golf ball, which I still just love and have sitting on my kitchen counter. The Japanese peach golf ball. The Momo. It's too small to be a peach, so it's the Chisai Momo. The little peach. So I'm looking in trees. I'm listening very carefully. I'm looking at sumac, tons and tons of sumac. I'm looking at this little forest. And yet I find very little. Where is everybody? So, okay, we're just outside walking around, and I needed to do some walking around. Had a pretty good night, all things considered. When I woke up, I heard sounds of my cat barfing, and my cat was barfing in the other room, so I didn't immediately jump up, and I went back to sleep for another, I don't know, hour or so. Then when I did get up, still really early, anything happening over there? No. And then when I did get up, I went up, you know, to eat breakfast and make tea. And I looked for the kitty barf. I could not find it. Okay, that's weird. Maybe she was just, you know, coughing and gagging and didn't actually barf until, you know, half an hour later when I did find the kitty barf. Barfed all over one of my maps. Oh, not good. Oh, this is why we can't have beautiful handmade things. There's a bird up there. It doesn't matter. It doesn't freaking matter. I can always make more maps, right? Seems logical. Yeah, but when I was eating, I realized I had some kind of dream about Mary. I can't remember her last name. I feel terrible. The hell is her name? But I used to work with this girl. I don't remember much about the dream. Just that vague feeling that I was thinking about her while I was asleep or something. Back in the olden days, back when I worked at the park, I used to work with this girl named Mary. And she was this little petite blonde girl. A blue-eyed blonde girl who looked like a freaking doll. She literally had doll features. And she was pale porcelain white. Just the most washed-out girl. She's natural blonde, so she's the most pale, washed-out person you've ever seen. It's a ghost. The first 10 layers of her skin were completely transparent. You know, one of those girls. Absolutely beautiful, and to make everything weirder, she was a complete and utter lolly. Utter and ridiculous. But not intentionally. This was totally natural. This was not an affectation on her part. She was extremely moe. If you understand moe, moe is girly girl. She's the girliest girly girl you've ever girled. Ugh. And of course, I was in love with her. Because she was really soft-spoken and just a sweetheart and really nice and super girly. And just she was a hell of a character. Yeah, kind of, you know, sheltered. Probably, you know, the baby of the family. Probably has a bunch of older siblings. I don't remember if she did or not. Or possibly an only child. Led a very sheltered life. And, apparently she thought I was the bee's knees. So we were always hanging out together. And we were always, our boss, Jim, he used to always schedule us together. He told me at one point in time it's because she asked him to schedule her with me. And oh my God. She was a hoot. And the thing I was thinking about her this morning when I was eating was this one sort of particular episode when she and I think we were both working, you know, coat check. Or maybe she was working coat check and I was bar backing or whatever. But one night we were working together and Rick, the catering manager, comes up to us. He goes, I need servers. Can you help out? Okay, kind of the nightly almost panic, right? Yeah, no problem, no problem. And I grabbed Mary. I mean, I said to Rick, I was like, yeah, we'll get Mary too. Come on, blah, blah. And Mary's like, what are we doing? Oh, yeah. Come on, we got to go plate food. It's time to plate the damn food. And she got all nervous and scared because I don't remember how it came up, but we were walking to one particular station, and Bob was there. Bob is the man. Okay, he's the chief cook. He is the guy. And he's an old Navy cook, and he's short, and he's squat, and he's got this bristle gray crew cut and a cigar in his mouth, and he's a very gruff guy, and he's scary. Even I've been scared of the guy, but not at that point. But anyway, Mary doesn't want to do this because she's scared of Bob. She's like, oh, he's so scary. I don't want to make him mad. It's like, sweetie, you don't have to do anything. You're good. Everything's fine. And we put her on potatoes. She was... Rick actually put her in front of something else first. And I said, no, Rick, switch her with me. Because it's easier to do potatoes. Because you just, you know, put 3 or 4 potatoes on the plate. I don't remember what we were having. I think I was saucing. Was I saucing? Or was I ricing? I don't know. But then commenced a very crazy and hectic 10 minutes. Or less, really. Call it 6 minutes of plating food, getting it on trays, and getting it out there. So yeah, we're talking... What's that sound? You gotta get 1,000 dinners out onto the floor, right? You move fast. You're plating, you know, one plate per second. It doesn't take 10 seconds to fill up, you know, one of these giant trays full of meals. And then the waiters pick them up, zoom, zoom them out, right? And Mary, she managed to maintain, but she was having kind of a little panic. Which was adorable, of course. Yeah, she was on potatoes. And so, you know, there's this giant thing of potatoes in front of you. When I say potatoes, I'm talking like red potatoes that have been quartered and baked. They're really freaking good, the way Bob cooks them up. And you have this giant, you know, pan full of these potatoes in front of you. And you put 3 potatoes on the plate. Basically, the plate comes off a table, and the first person that has the plate either puts the steak or the chicken on it, whatever it is that we're eating, right? The main's gone, or the rice goes down first to put the chicken on, all right? Or the noodles go down first. Then this gets passed along. Oh, here comes a biker. Somebody is here. I bet these guys parked on the other side. Well, so anyway, potatoes is really relatively easy because, you know, you're wearing a plastic glove. You pick up 3 quartered potatoes, or 4 if they're small, and you plop them next to the chicken. You just grab, put them down, pass the damn plate. Okay, right? Then somebody puts the beans on or whatever, right? And I'm walking through the mush again. Ah, my feet are getting wet. Now my foot is cold and damp. All right, whatever. That's cool. So that was Mary's first time plating food, and it's the craziest, like I said, 5 or 6 minutes that you can imagine. It's insane. People are freaking out. People are screaming. I don't know why. Everybody's like, yeah. Food is coming in. There are multiple people. You're standing at a line. You don't have to do anything except put the damn food on the plate. And as soon as your pan of potatoes or whatever starts getting low, you look up and there's somebody standing there with a new pan of potatoes. And then as soon as you run out, somebody else walks up, takes the empty pan so the new pan can get put down. It's a freaking dance. And so we got back to, you know, the coat check or whatever. And she's like, oh my goodness, that was exhausting. Because it is. It's this intense thing that just happens briefly. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of fun in a weird way. And she's like, oh, yeah, I get that too. Because strangely enough, that was kind of my favorite part about that job. Because most of the time, you know, you're sitting around doing nothing. If you're doing, you know, like coat check, you know, you work for 10 minutes as people come in, then you sit around for a few hours, and then you work for 10 minutes as people leave, right? And there's other sort of positions where you just have to be there in case somebody needs something. Then you jump up, okay, yeah, wait, what's that? I heard a sound right in front of me. Who's up here? Was that just a bird? It sounded like somebody taking a step, and this is a known marmot area. Ugh. I'm gonna climb up here and take a closer look. Huh. I don't see any squirrels, I don't see any marmots, I don't hear any more noise. Huh. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I always thought that was kind of the funnest part of the job because, you know, suddenly there's action. And how long this takes really, you know, depends on how many people this giant dinner is serving, right? But, you know, 20 minutes is tops, maximum. But ever since then, ever since that one time, ugh. As soon as it was getting close to the time to start serving food, Mary would then be looking for me and start asking, you know, oh, are we going to plate food? Are we going to... Yeah, we can do that. So every time we worked together, which was, you know, like 3 or 4 nights a week, oh my God. Oh, she would be excited to do, you know, potatoes. It became her thing. It became like her raison d'etre. She'd come to work, you know, and she's adorably cute and all this, that, and the only job that they would give her is the cute girl job, which is, you know, here, take people's coats and get tips because they'll give you money because you're cute. Swear to God. So, yeah, she, in the summer, when she started working there, she was underage. But you could work there under certain circumstances. But she turned 16, so she was like 16 years old when we were doing this. Oh, but that became her favorite thing. We'd, you know, Rick would start running around looking for people to help plate up the food. And we'd just jump up and go to whatever station he needed us at. And we'd just walk back there, and Mary would just say, I'll do the potatoes. And she was Mary Potatoes pretty much from then on. There were times when there weren't potatoes, though. And she'd get nervous or whatever. I do remember her doing chicken at one point in time, because I remember she was standing on one side of me, and she would put the chicken on the plate, and it would come to me, and then I would sauce it. And then it would go to the next person who would, you know, put the asparagus down. Or whatever. Oh, Mary. And the reason I think about... You know, the reason I was thinking about her is because I saw that video the other night, and there was a woman painting a ball-jointed doll that, of course, had her face. But you've been listening to the Dubious Mary's Potato Committee, a show that airs every damn day at 1930 UTC right here on Anon Radio, and this is the end of the line.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes. Huh.
Well, I wasn't expecting any marmots, really. It's a little cold. And suddenly it's windy. And it's all foggy. Do marmots come out in the fog? Fog mod.